When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam.
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster for episode 261 of the show. Keaton, this is the last podcast of the 2022 season. We purposefully recorded this after the last game of the season this week instead of our normal Monday show. How do you feel at the end of this miserable season? How will you remember 2022?
Frustrating, very frustrating. I think we all had very different expectations coming into the season, and this, especially the way that it started, was very frustrating. And then we'll tease there in the middle with that massive hot stretch in June, where they were the hottest team in baseball, and then briefly in first place in the division, or maybe better than second behind the Yankees because they were on some absurd pace.
Yeah, I don't think they ever caught the Yankees.
Yeah, but they were rolling, doing some absurd things there, positioning themselves well, and then really struggled towards the trade deadline. Didn't know what direction the team was going. Trade lines didn't help clarify any of that. And then they just continued to struggle all the way to the end. And it was just really frustrating. And I think Cora's comments, I don't know if it was today or if it was yesterday, but I saw the quote today that he said that we're like the best, worst team in MLB history. And it's like just frustrating how we ended up that way. And I was like, yeah, that's about right. I feel the same way. It's pretty spot on.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd go with best, worst team. I feel like there are definitely some contenders here, but I mean, I think he's on to something. There was a lot of underperformance on this team, a lot of injuries for sure. We will always have, what was it, June, when they went like 22-4 or something crazy. But yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of highlights from this season. But on this episode, what we're going to be doing here is, because I had about an hour and a half of time to kill today, I deep dove into the Red Sox history to see just sort of where this season ranked in terms of futility. And we have a whole lot of numbers and some facts about the 2022 season that we're going to get to. We're going to put this really weird stretch of Red Sox baseball here in the 2010s into context. And then we're going to discuss in order, you know, these different pending free agents, Nathan Eovaldi, J.D. Martinez, and Xander Bogaerts. The reason why we're going to focus on those three is because, you know, they're obviously the ones who have been here the longest. You know, there are a couple other guys up, Pham, Waka, Hill, and some other names as well that we really won't get to on this show. But, you know, we're going to focus on all that stuff today. So let's go ahead and get right to the numbers here. So this team finished in last place. And before your least favorite Red Sox team of all time, the Bobby Valentine 2012 Red Sox, their previous last place finish prior to 2012 was in 1992. So that's a pretty long stretch between last place finishes, 1992 to 2012. Prior to 1992, the team didn't finish last place in their division and all the way back to 1932. So we're talking about just two last place finishes in 79 years. So fast forward from 2012, the Red Sox have finished in last place five times in just 11 seasons. 2012, 2014, 2015, 2020, 2022. This is a really weird stretch for the Red Sox because the other weird thing is they've been also extremely successful. They won the World Series in 2013 and 2018, and they finished first place four times, 2013, 2016, 2017, 2018. This is the oddest stretch of baseball in Red Sox history that we've just lived through. The highest of highs, the lowest of lows. Really weird.
That's nuts. That's such a swing in success. And not only that, like a lot of those first place finishes and last place finishes. Well, I mean, with 9 first place / last place finishes in 11 years, they're kind of like bound to happen back to back. But a lot of them were like sandwiched next to each other. But a lot of the same players, not a lot of turnover. So it's just kind of hilarious to see like repetitive talent hitting highs and lows in consecutive years and finishing last in the division and then winning the World Series and then finishing last again and then finishing first in the division again later with like the same core. And it's hard to, I think, quantify the effect that a manager has on Major League Baseball team in particular. Of all of the four major sports, I think the Major League Baseball is the hardest to quantify. But that might be your best case to really try to quantify it. But then also the effect of role players and the effect of having a solid chemistry in the dugout. Because I really think that there are the major differences between those first and last place finishes with basically having the same core guys was a managerial flip or like one or two glue guys in the clubhouse. And it completely changed the entire trajectory of full seasons, full 162 game slates. And it wasn't major tweaks, which is a really weird thing that I think is the hardest to quantify in baseball. But I also think like baseball is probably the only sport where a small tweak like that could have that major of an effect on a team. So what makes baseball great?
Yeah, I think I agree with you that the human component of it that you're talking about, yeah. You know, especially when you're playing over 162 games plus playoffs, you know, sometimes more if you end up having to play in a game 163 that doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, I mean, there's just a lot that goes into that. These guys travel together. They essentially live together and eat every meal together for, you know, more than half the year when you factor in spring training and stuff like that. So yeah, those relationships really, really do matter quite a bit. A couple more numbers to kind of wrap up how weird this is. The team has 18 first place finishes in the entire 122-year history of the team. Obviously, the Red Sox, a very storied franchise, dates all the way back to 1901. The four first place finishes that they've had in the 2010s actually match a high for any decade. They also had four first place finishes in the 1910s, so 100 years between. In that decade, they won four World Series. So their second, third, fourth, and fifth World Series, 1912, 1915, 1916, and 1918. Keaton, a strange thing happened after 1918. Do you remember what that was?
Well, I wasn't there.
Well, I know you weren't, but you were there for part of this strange thing. The Red Sox had an 86-year drought after that, which ended in 2004. So what I'm hoping, Keaton, is that the Red Sox winning in 1918 and 2018 and having a super successful 1910s and a super successful 2010s, that history does not repeat itself. And that we don't go 86 more years without another title.
Yeah, for sure. Are you so what would this would be the curse of the bets?
This would be the curse of the bets. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, hopefully it's extremely short-lived.
Or what would we call it? Like if we wanted to rhyme it with Mookie, maybe it could be like
the spooky of the Mookie.
The spooky of the Mookie or something like that. Like something, yeah. I don't know, but yeah, we'd have to come up with something a little bit more fun to say. But yeah, I just think it's weird. You know, it's baseball, when you look at it, it's obviously got a much longer history than any of the other major sports in this country. And certainly it is weird when you are diving into the numbers and you come across things like that just, you know, what are the odds that the two most successful decades are exactly 100 years apart? You know, it's weird.
Sure is. But baseball tends to just almost be deliberately weird like that. Just yeah. To make us think terrible thoughts like that. But it's like not isolated. It's like that for like every team and just like all over the place.
Yeah, and also, you know, 100 years since the Red Sox traded Babe Ruth, we have, you know, this a little bit more than 100 years, but we have this crazy Shohei Ohtani guy running around and doing even better stuff than Babe Ruth ever did on both sides of the ball. So what a wild time to be alive.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to some facts about the actual 2022 Boston Red Sox. I wanted to see just how bad they were and some of the things that made this team so bad. So, you know, I don't know necessarily if all of these things are what made them bad, but there's certainly things that I found interesting when I was looking through. So let's go ahead and start with the first one. This is the oldest team that the Red Sox have had since the 2013 team that won the World Series. The pitchers on this team averaged over 30 years old, 30.2. The batters, almost 29, 28.8 years old. They finished 22 games behind the division-leading Yankees, which trailed only the 2012 and 2014 Red Sox. Or for games behind the division leaders, since the division was made up of just the five teams that it is now. Fan attendance for this year, not very strong. They drew 2.6 million fans to Fenway this year, a little bit over that, whereas their peak years have been 3 million plus fans. This, when I looked at where this would fall in terms of attendance, it fell right in line with like 2000, 2001 levels of attendance for the Red Sox. So before any curse was broken, when, you know, coming off some years that were interesting, but certainly years that the Yankees were still very good and the Red Sox hadn't won anything. So Let me first ask you about the fan attendance thing, because we did a whole podcast on where the Red Sox rank in terms of the Boston hierarchy of sports teams. You know, does this say anything to you that the Red Sox attendance has dipped to levels that it hasn't really seen in, you know, 20 years here? What, if anything, what does this tell you about the team?
Maybe a little bit, but I wouldn't read a whole lot into it, because just because fans aren't there live at the games doesn't mean that they're not watching. And like, streaming numbers for games is still pretty high. Red Sox games and baseball, not even just Red Sox, but baseball games in local markets are still dominating the shares of viewers every night. So just because people aren't going to games in person, that would just tell me that it's just too expensive to attend and it's just hard to attend, which makes a lot of sense, because it is, as prices and costs of everything in ballpark continues to rise at just astronomical rates, it makes it harder and harder to attend and much easier to just watch the game at home. And you can still make those same memories with your family at home watching games. I don't have quite the same feeling, but you still have make the same connection over the team, the players, bonding over the games, watching it at home at a significantly decreased cost than you would at the game. So that's kind of how I've always felt about it. Like, I know like the in-stadium attendance of baseball gets brought up all the time, and it's like continued to decline, but baseball itself isn't going anywhere. Like, continue to get monster sponsorships. Each team, or almost every team, has its own local TV deal, which rakes in a bunch of money. Every single team is like number one for their primetime local markets during the season. So it's, people are just consuming it. They're just consuming it in different ways. So
I wouldn't read a ton into it. I do, you know, think it's kind of funny, Keaton, that you are doing a very 2022 thing and blaming inflation for why people aren't going to games.
Yeah.
But largely, I agree with your points.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that way like a decade ago, too. Also, especially like, well, I guess a decade ago, I was still in the market, but being outside of the market, like the only way to watch them now is when they come to Chicago in some way or form. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, streaming is the only option that I have. Mm-hmm. And I know that's the same for a ton of people. Like, being able to go to a game is a luxury. Mm-hmm. And even people within the market of the team, like having to get to Boston, first of all, is difficult if you're not like right around the area. It's like, I remember my dad taking me to games, like it was a whole thing. He'd come pick me up out of school early. It'd be like a 3-hour drive. Then we'd have to go, we'd park at the Riverside station, take the T in, we gotta get there early. So like, it was almost basically like a full day event to go to a game. That's a lot beyond just the cost of actually attending. Like, there's a whole lot more associated with that, which makes it difficult. It's a lot easier to just sit at home in the living room and watch it.
Oh yeah. I mean, certainly. And you're preaching in the choir here, especially, you know, I have a young kid, so I totally get that. I probably went to even more games when I lived in D.C., and then Nationals were just super cheap and really accessible, and the Metro is just easier than, you know, navigating the MBTA with the state that's in these days as well. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of reasons why this could be. Let's get back to the stats on the field, though, for the 2022 team. Runs scored for this team was under 740 for the season, which is the first time it's been this low since 2014, one of those last place seasons we mentioned. They allowed 780 plus runs, which was the most since 2019. And it's only been worse than this five times in the last 25 years, dating back to 1997. So not a very good runs allowed. We know that pitching is one of the biggest problems for this team and has been. We'll get into detail of that a little bit later. I think one of the weirdest things for me was, you know, looking at this roster with JD Martinez and Rafael Devers and realizing that they didn't have a 30 home run bat this year for the first time since 2017. But even stranger than that, they didn't have a guy reach even 90 RBIs. Devers ended the year at 88 RBIs. You know, first time since 2012. Again, it was striking how many times when I looked for when the last time X thing happened, it ended up being the 2012 year with Bobby Valentine that, you know, I know you wrote about when we wrote about our least favorite years with this round table earlier, or most frustrating years. So, you know, I was kind of surprised that 2012 kept coming up here as a parallel for this season.
Yeah, that year sucked, man. I hated it. I hated it so much. I'm not surprised. Not shocked in the slightest. I am surprised, though, right there with you, that no 100 RBI, no even 90 RBI player, no one got to 30 home runs. Devers at 27 was just shy of that. That's pretty wild.
This team is really good players. Especially because, well, like, if you look at Devers' first half, I don't know if you talk to a bookie or Vegas or something about what the odds are after Devers' first half that he doesn't get to 100 RBIs and in at least 30 home runs. I think you would have been a very rich man if you bet against that happening, because the odds looked extremely in his favor. To be honest, at the half, I thought Devers was going to do something that he has never done before. I thought he was going to go 40 plus home runs and go all 2018 JD Martinez on us. I thought it was going to be the season for him. So I think that's definitely one of the most shocking things, is the fall off that we saw from Rafael Devers in the second half. And whether that was health related or whether it was mechanical or whatever, I don't think we'll really ever figure that out. But, you know, that was definitely bizarre.
Well, I was just thinking, I feel like he was at like 24 homers at the All-Star break. So I just looked it up. He was at 22. He was at 22. Yeah. And he hit five in the second half. Five homers. That injury that just absolutely sucked everything out of him. It's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. It screwed a lot of things up. He kept insisting he was healthy, but clearly, I mean, something was just not working right.
22 homers and 55 RBIs at the All-Star break.
That's crazy.
It is. It really is.
Yep. Xander Bogaerts was the only player on this team that hit over 300 this year. That in and of itself isn't that odd, but I think, you know, given the way that Xander battled through injury all year, especially after that collision in May, you know, I was a little surprised at the strong push that he made to go after the batting title. And obviously he didn't get there, but, you know, it was a valiant effort in the season. Only two guys on this team with an OBP over 350. That was the fewest that this team has had since 2017. Again, just Rafi and Xander there. And only one player slugging over 500. First year that's happened since 2017, when no one did. Devers was the only one that slugged over 500. That was really surprising to me. I know the big knock on Xander this year, especially, you know, despite the season that he's had, it's been a very good season by WAR. But his power being down was a little bit odd. And then, you know, JD Martinez, who came back today and in his last game with the Red Sox probably hit two home runs to sort of close out his time with the Red Sox in all likelihood. you know, not getting anything close to a 500 slug from him was extremely surprising.
That's pretty crazy. No one slugged over 500 for that team, and they finished in first. I would not have expected that.
Yeah, it was just like a very... There were a lot of people in the high 400s on that team, and some good defense and, you know, some pretty good pitching performances. Chris Sale was money in 2017. But, yeah, nobody over 500 that year. Very strange.
That's pretty crazy. And they had no 30 home run hitters and only 100 RBIs.
Yep.
Crazy. Wow. How about that?
How about that?
Baseball's weird, man. I think we said that before.
Yep. On the pitching side of things, this was the 20th worst pitching season ever in 122 years for the Red Sox. This was not 2020, so that's a good thing. But by ERA, it was the worst since, you know, the 2012, 2019, and 2020 seasons. If we're looking at, you know, most recent bad seasons. Starters ERAs were 24th worst in Red Sox history. Bullpen ERA was 40th worst, although that's kind of a weird stat because they didn't really use bullpens for a lot of those early seasons. And this was the one that I think was kind of the most surprising to me and stood out was Nick Pivetta. He obviously pitched the game today. Didn't have a great performance, but pitched okay. 179 and two-thirds innings pitched by Nick Pivetta were the fewest innings to lead the team over a full season since Clay Buchholz threw 170 and a third innings in 2014. I never thought I would be talking about Clay Buchholz as a innings leader for a team. I completely forgot that happened.
Yeah. I honestly never thought he got that high. I thought like he peaked at like 111, so that's kind of shocking.
Yeah. I mean, it was a last place team. So apparently Clay Buchholz being your innings pitch leader is not a good thing. But yeah, he got there.
Crazy. Somehow. I would have thought.
Yeah. So before we move on to talking about players, any other kind of closing thoughts on the 2022 Red Sox and this truly bizarre stretch of history for the Red Sox with up and downs and, you know, it's either last or it's first, and there's only been two seasons in the last 11 years where they weren't last or first. So it's just a really freaking weird.
Yeah, I mean, there was just a lot of weird things about this year, and the Nick Pivetta thing stands out in the fact that it wasn't even close. That second on the list is Michael Wacha.
Yeah.
And right behind him by just a couple innings is Rich Hill. Two guys that you and I didn't think would be top three, and two guys that you thought probably weren't going to get over 100 or pretty close to that.
Well, I thought Wacha would. I thought he would get to 125, and he surpassed that by a little bit.
Yeah.
But I did not think Rich Hill was even going to make it to, like, 80 innings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was surprising.
Got way past that, and Evaldi just barely got over 100. But, yeah, I mean, that in and of itself really tells a story that with those three guys leading the way, it's not shocking that they gave up a bunch of runs, although Wacha did have himself a really, really nice season. But if those are the guys that are leading the way, then you got to figure, well, who came after them? And, you know, a whole lot of Cutter Crawford and Connor Siebold kind of doing you there. And, yeah. I mean, you talk about the frustration, like, just the weirdness of Chris Sale's season and how frustrated he was with just the, like, cracking a rib weirdly in spring training and that being a massive setback, and then he finally comes back, takes a line drive off the pinky, and that ends the season. And it's like,
what about the fall off the bike too?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That too. Like, just what a mess.
It's crazy.
What an absolute mess.
Like, one thing after another with Chris Sale. I think that You know, if we do one of these sort of looking back in do-overs, if Devers never gets the injury that sort of derails his second half, JD hits a few more home runs. Like, let's just say he's not vintage JD, but he's worth 10 more dingers. And Chris Sale actually comes back and is healthy for the rest of the season instead of getting the two freak injuries. I mean, this team's pushing for a playoff spot, right? If those three things happen, they're pretty, like, close to the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. Especially with the season that Bogaerts had. I mean, they're 8 wins behind Tampa. So you got to think, like, 70 innings at a Sale, a healthy Devers, and JD Martinez not hitting that sinkhole, that's got to be worth 8 wins. Yeah.
I would think so.
That doesn't seem like a lot over 162 games, just 8 wins.
No, and even just like the mental boost of, you know, I think that's another thing that's underrated about having a guy like Sale. When Sale's right, he's taking the ball every 5 days. It's a complete lift to the team. And I also think you get this this weird, like, kind of trickle down effect on the offense too, because they don't feel like they need to go out and press that day. You know, they're like, okay, we can go out and score like 2 or 3 runs and it's going to be fine. And I think that there's just this sort of mental refresh factor that offenses get from having an ace be able to lift them up and carry that load every once in a while.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
So, I'm happy to be closing the book on 2022. But I think, you know, if I had to close my thoughts on this, you know, the core is there. And especially if they can figure out Xander and Devers. They're a few tweaks away, I think, from this being still a very good baseball team. And I think that's been the key trait about these Red Sox teams in the 2010s. And you know, I maybe didn't feel quite this way about 2022 because everything went, or 2020 because everything went wrong that year. But,
yeah.
You know, it just feels like we're way closer to a first place team than a last place team ought to feel.
Yeah, for sure.
So, not a bad place to be, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. At least you're not the Royals or something, or the Tigers, where it just looks like a complete dumpster fire.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the big name players, though, that are going to potentially be ending their careers with the Red Sox. And in one case, strong no, please don't end your career with the Red Sox. But let's get to the first one. Nathan Eovaldi here had a very disappointing season by his standards, certainly after the 2021 that he had. He ends his year with the Red Sox and his time with the Red Sox over 5 years with 461 and two-thirds innings pitched, a 4.05 ERA with the team, a 113 ERA plus, 1.26 whip, one All-Star appearance, fourth in the Cy Young voting in 2021, and a record of 26-18. Let's just take a second to appreciate Nate. I mean, if Nate does leave the team, Keaton, how are you going to remember Nathan Eovaldi when, you know, 5 years from now we're still doing this podcast, because I think we're probably going to be. But, you know, when we bring up that name, how will you think of Eovaldi?
Good when he was on the mound, and his success often led to team success.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I think I'll always think of the 2018 playoffs for him.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'll always think of down the stretch in 2021 in the team making a push, a deeper push than I thought was going to be possible for that 2021 team. When it comes to the qualifying offer for Nathan Eovaldi, where do you stand on that at this point? You know, finally having the whole season under our belt to assess the situation and getting to see a couple healthy starts from Nathan Eovaldi towards the end of the year.
I feel better having seen the starts, to be honest with you, than also just taking stock of where the pitching is right now. I don't hate it. And kind of using my favorite website here, Spotrac here, they have his market value as $16.7 million. Probably looking at like a 2-year deal. That's not that far off from qualifying offer. I think it's maybe like $1.5 million off
of qualifying offer. Might be a little bit more than that. Offer. Yeah. I think the QO was high 18s last year. So, yeah, probably a couple mil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for 1 year, I actually don't feel all that bad about it, especially given the state of the pitching rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And a presumably healthy Nate Eovaldi coming into the season. You probably have to figure maybe miss some time during the season. But the pitching is not in great standing right now. We know that he can handle Boston and the AL East. And if their intention is to build something formidable for next year, you'd be a nice little part of it. So, and then if he declines and goes somewhere else, he can get a draft pick out of it. So I think it makes sense.
I'm not there with you, on Eovaldi. I think one of the things that worried me about, you know, the whole kind of second half of the season after he suffered his injury and he came back and he was pitching through it and then, you know, was out for a little while longer. Even when he came back for these last two starts, the velocity wasn't quite where, you know, 2021 Eovaldi was or where he's been for most of his time with the Red Sox. And, you know, as he ages, we all know the injury history that Nathan Eovaldi has carried throughout his career. I just think that's kind of expensive for a year of Nathan Eovaldi, where health, I think, is still a relatively big question. And, you know, you mentioned it, I think, for the same reasons that you kind of want to bring him back, is all the uncertainty in the pitching staff next year. You know, we don't know what we're getting out of Chris Sale. Pivetta's not great, but he's going to throw innings. And then Waka and Hill, you know, potentially being gone as well. It seems like Hill for sure. I just feel like you need a little bit more of a sure thing. And I think there's better ways to allocate that money. And, you know, when it comes to the draft pick, the fact that they idiotically decided to, you know, still be over the luxury tax threshold means that that's a fourth rounder instead of a second rounder if anyone else signs him. And to me, I think it's too risky.
It's interesting, though, because a couple starts before he went on the IL again, I asked you, how concerned were you that his velocity was down? Mm-hmm. He didn't seem to be gaining it back. And you said you were not concerned at all with his ability to regain his velocity, or at least pitch around it.
He has a lot of pitches. I don't know, man. Like, I don't think the velocity is the thing that makes him great, because I've seen people tee up off of his 97-mile-an-hour fastball. But I do think that there's something about him not having this velocity that makes him a little less confident to pitch the way that he normally does. And I feel like he just nibbles a little bit more with this reduced stuff. And if he can get around that, like, you know, as Eck has described far better than I ever can, he has like the whole kitchen sink of pitches and weapons out there, and he uses them all during games too. So, you know, he's definitely capable of doing it. I'm just worried about, you know, if they sign him to a QO and Eovaldi gives you 100 innings next year, that's a pretty big disaster in my opinion.
But what if it's the last 100 innings?
Are you in the playoffs?
Yes.
Well, then maybe that's a different story. But, at this point, I'm feeling a little risk averse, so I'm going to stay away.
That's fair.
Yeah. Next guy, JD Martinez. So, appreciating JD, this signing, I think you can make a pretty strong argument that the signing of JD Martinez is the best signing the Red Sox have made, free agent signing, since Manny Ramirez. Here are his ranks in Red Sox history at DH. He's second in games played at 643. Over five seasons, he slashed .291, .362, .524. That line's a little bit better with today, but hasn't updated yet. 130 home runs, that is up to date with today. 886 OPS, 423 RBIs, and a 133 OPS plus. Two Silver Slugger Awards in 2018, which is still one of the funniest things. Fourth in the 2018 AL MVP voting. Four-time All-Star, and just overall an incredible signing for the Red Sox.
Yeah, for sure. And he really kind of closed this season pretty impressively. Over his last 15 games, 315, 351, 722 with five homers. So it seems like whatever had been ailing him there for the 3 month stretch, big chunk of the season, he kind of figured out. But I would assume that they're not going to extend that, and that this was probably the end.
That's interesting, because I'm probably a no on the QO here, but I actually feel slightly better about the JD Martinez QO than I do about the Eovaldi QO at this point.
Like, interesting.
Yeah, I think I flipped on those two guys, and I know that pitching is the more valuable thing, and obviously, like, if you get anything close to 2021 Eovaldi, then a QO is, like, you know, a no-brainer. That works out very well for you. But with JD Martinez, like, first of all, if they try and go in-house at DH, like, I don't think they have anything that's really worthwhile there at this point. You know, you're talking about like Dahlbeck or Hosmer or something like that going to DH, and I don't really want to spend a ton of long-term capital on the DH position. And JD Martinez, he's a known quantity here, and he's definitely a tinkerer, so it wouldn't totally shock me if he, you know, figured out a way to be productive in 2023. So yeah, I'm not saying I want to do it. I don't want to extend the QO to either of these guys, but I'll be more okay with a QO to JD.
That's interesting. Spotrac has his market value at 15.1 AAV.
Okay. Very similar to the Eovaldi AAV.
Yeah. I would feel better extending one to Eovaldi than I would Martinez.
Is it just because of the pure need on the pitching side, or is it because watching JD this year, you thought, all right, it's he doesn't have it anymore?
Well, it's a weird thing to say that he doesn't, because his line, honestly, is like crazy similar to his line from 2021, just minus the homers.
Yeah.
It's like everything else is incredibly similar.
Right.
Like OBP is almost exactly the same. BABIP is almost exactly the same. Walk rate and strikeout rates are almost exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Batting average was down a little bit, down 14 points. But that's not a massive gap.
No.
It's just he had half the home runs, which is nuts.
Yeah. He did the same thing Xander did, just a little power outage this year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has had the back issues that constantly bark at him, and he definitely dealt with those this year. He missed a little bit of time because of back stuff. So, you know, I wonder if a little bit of something getting out of sync there. But, you know, as you age, it's not like your back tends to drastically improve with age.
Yeah.
That tends to get trickier as the years go on, and especially doing a violent rotational movement like swinging a baseball bat. So,
yeah,
I don't know. But what to hear Cora talk about JD Martinez, because I always listen to the Cora interviews that he does on WEEI before he gets on the games. Like, Cora is just not concerned about the fact that he's been so late on velocity and doesn't think that it's an age-related decline thing. It's just something that JD Martinez has to go back home and figure out in the lab. So, you know, I know that Cora is just often very optimistic with these guys, but I do think there is something to the fact that JD Martinez has been a pretty damn good fastball hitter over the last few years, and I'm not sure it's completely gone away.
Yeah, I mean, so even looking beyond just the straight stat line and digging into some of, like, the actual contact metrics, his barrel percentage was basically the same as last year. Mm-hmm. Sweet spot percentage was basically the same. Hard hit rate was down 8%, but last year it was in the top 10% of the league. So even being down 8%, it's still 6% above the major league average. So he's still hammering the shit out of the ball.
Right.
So, and his exit velocity is also above major league average. So, like, he's still squaring it up. He's still hitting it really hard. It's just weird to see that the homers weren't there.
Yeah. That was another thing that Cora mentioned, was the expected stats for him are just much better than what has come out on the field to kind of, you know, solidify everything that you just said. So, yeah.
Yeah, now that we talk about it, I guess I'm more on board with a qualifying offer. I guess I'm, because of the age, I'm hesitant to go beyond a year. But right. A year, I think I'm fine with.
Yeah, I'd be fine with a year, for sure. All right, let's get to the biggest domino here. Xander Bogaerts had a very emotional game today, and has had an emotional probably last month of the season, if not longer. Probably emotional year for Xander Bogaerts. And Cora pulled him, I believe it was in the seventh inning today, and he got a big ovation and gave some hugs on the field and in the dugout, and a nice sweet hug to Rafi. Because this could potentially be his last game in a Red Sox uniform, and I really hope that it's not. But if it is, here is how he ranks among Red Sox shortstop history in all of the following categories. He is first in games played at 1,264. He's first in runs scored at 752. He's first in hits at 1,410. First in singles at 931. First in doubles at 308. He's eighth in triples at 15. Nomar had 50 freaking triples, which is crazy. He's second in home runs to Nomar at 156. He's third in RBIs behind Nomar and Joe Cronin. He's third in stolen bases at 74, again behind Nomar and Freddie Parent, who played in the early 1900s, so very different game back then. Batting average, he's third at 291, behind again Cronin and Nomar. Third in slugging at 458, third in OPS, third in OPS plus, 814 and 116, and fifth in OBP at 356. So the question that I had for you, the first question that I had for you that was also a listener question from our listener, House of Kuzu, was, has Xander done enough in your eyes over his time here with the Red Sox to surpass Nomar as the greatest shortstop in Red Sox history?
No. He hasn't. But it's close. He's number two. Which I think was it 2020, before the 2020 season, when we were in that COVID lull that you did your whole archival thing? I believe you had Bogart second to Nomar.
Yep.
I still think that's true 2 years later. This was the first season that Bogarts, by Fangraphs WAR, had a season that was worth six WAR. Nomar did that four times, and twice he had seasons over seven. He was really freaking good. Better batting average, better OBP, slightly on the OBP. Didn't strike out all that much. Like you mentioned, he had more homers and stuff too. It's just the on-field performance was crazy. Really, really good defense as well. So, not quite number one shortstop in Red Sox history. Still got to give that to Nomar.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. This is one of those situations where if the Red Sox do find a way to bring Xander back and he plays another, 5 to 8 years with the team, I think it's a no-brainer. He becomes that guy for me just because of longevity, and he's going to own all of these stats, or most of them, maybe not the rate stats, but he's going to own at least all of the counting stats for sure shortly. I mean, he will really only need one more season probably to get the home runs and all those other things. But yeah, I mean, when you look at Nomar, he's got a lot going for him. Xander's got four silver sluggers and four all-star appearances. Nomar had just one silver slugger, but he also played at the same time as Jeter and A-Rod and Miguel Tejada, who were pretty damn good. And I know that Xander's got some pretty damn good contemporaries as well. Six all-star appearances for Nomar, two batting titles. Xander has none, and the Rookie of the Year award as well that Nomar won. I think Nomar definitely had the highest highs, but I think that longevity matters for a lot. So I agree with you. But and Xander has the two rings. We have to give him credit for that too. Like the two rings is sort of a big deal. But this one's close, because Xander's my favorite player, and it's not particularly close in that category. But yeah, I think Nomar is the guy who is just a little bit more talented.
Yeah. It is close, though.
It's very close. It's only going to get closer.
Yeah.
If Xander does come back, it's his.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. But great question. And we had that on the agenda before you even gave us that question. So appreciate that. Next question comes from Gavin Blackburn. And he says, there's almost certainly a few trades coming, but lots of fans don't want to see top prospects go. Do you think fans value prospects too highly, particularly ones in the lower minors? Keaton, this seems kind of tailor-made for the former host of the Dynasty Guru podcast.
It is.
What do you think about this?
Yeah. And I will wholeheartedly throw myself in this as well. The answer is yes. Absolutely yes. the bust rate of prospects is just astronomically high, that when you have the chance to turn them into actualized talent, you should do that at just about every opportunity. And that's what Dave Dombrowski was actually really good at doing. When you trade prospects for actualized talent, basically what you're doing is you're the best case scenario is the prospects that you traded reach the talent that you're acquiring. So, or if it's the other way around, if you're the one that is trading the talent away for prospects, the best case scenario is the prospects that you just acquired reach the talent level that you just traded away. Chances are that's not going to happen. So when you have the chance to flip that and acquire actualized talent, you really should do that. But we love dreaming on potential, and it's the kind of like the fear of a false positive there. I forgot what that actually is called in psychology, but there's an actual term for that there. But no one wants to be the guy who trades Fernando Tatis for two awful years of 35-year-old James Shields. No one wants to do that. But that is the possibility of that being an outcome is absurdly rare, that you shouldn't be afraid of it. But because there is just the mere possibility of that happening paralyzes everybody with fear. But it's not even just fans. It's Major League Baseball teams themselves. They covet the potential over actualized talent far often more than the actual talent itself. And we see that play out a lot. I mean, obviously, there's a little bit other factors because they're actually paying these guys monies, and there's a few other economic factors in there as well. But that's why when we were talking about the fact that Washington was actually entertaining offers for Juan Soto, the Red Sox should have given literally like, here's our farm, who do you want? Take your pick, and they're yours. Because the chances that Red Sox have anybody in their system right now that's going to turn into Juan Soto is zero, and Juan Soto is 23 years old. So, we definitely do. And I fully throw myself in that too, because I get attached to these guys, and I'm like, no, but this is like 99th percentile is like, he could become, I don't know, Mark Bellhorn. That's crazy. Why would we ever trade that guy? When in reality, they're probably going to flame out in AAA and maybe become like Michael Chavis.
Yeah, because even when they do work out, like I remember one of the most highly touted prospects in recent memory was Byron Buxton. Everybody was sort of billing him as the next Mike Trout. And even when the talent does manifest itself on the field, like we've seen Byron Buxton over the last few years with crazy power, crazy speed, and elite defense. But the one knock on Byron Buxton is he just can't stay on the field. So when you have a guy who does do all of those things at the major league level, like let's just use Xander Bogaerts as an example here. A guy who's very durable, who produces at an all-star level year after year after year. You can't just assume that because Marcelo Mayer is like a really good prospect that he is going to turn into Xander Bogaerts, because Xander Bogaerts is just so much more rare than we as fans sort of give him credit for. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's the attractiveness of the unknown that always gets people. But to answer your question, Gavin, yes, yes, yes. We absolutely overvalue prospects, and we should be very aggressive about trading top prospect talent for established major leaguers. And that's why, you know, I know that Keaton and I are both in on the Sean Murphy thing. You know, if it takes a couple of the team's top four prospects to go get Sean Murphy, you know, I do that in a second.
Gerickson Profar was the number one prospect in all of baseball for 2 years. 2 years. And he was like untouchable, the next five-tool god. And his first two-war season was this year.
Yeah. Happens, man.
Yeah.
Happens a lot. A lot more than you'd like it to.
Yeah.
And I think it has even more volatility in baseball than any other sport.
Yep.
So. Okay. And our last question of the night, and our last question of the 2022 podcasting season, comes from Diego Fernandez. And, very appropriately, this is a question about Chaim Bloom. So it's the perfect way to end the show. Is there anything Bloom could do to earn your trust if he doesn't re-sign re-sign Xander plus extend Devers? Specifically, if he were to address the glaring bullpen, the rotation and outfield issues, making the 2023 team objectively better, is that enough to do, or do those two things simply matter too much to the team? This is a really interesting question. So, if he doesn't get that extension done with Devers and doesn't re-sign Xander, but does make substantial improvements to this team, is that enough for us to trust Bloom? What's your take on that, Keaton?
Well, we talked about this on a previous episode, maybe a little over a month ago, or maybe it was like right around the trade deadline, I think.
Okay.
We talked about this, and my answer was yes, and your answer was no. So my answer was, it was similar to this. It was basically I think it was centered around Bogarts. Like, if he doesn't re-sign Bogarts, then is there, like, do you lose all that goodwill? And my response was, well, what's plan B? Does the team get better without him? Does he have a backup plan? And does someone get replaced? And I was like, if that's the case, then yes. And you were like, no, absolutely not. Bogarts has got to be here for that. So I'm curious to see if since then your answer has changed. But my answer is still the same. So, yeah, I mean, it would absolutely suck to see him go. And he means a lot to this team. And I would prefer him be on the roster. But if the team gets, objectively better for 2023 and is in the, we're playing October baseball a year from now, then, yeah, it was the right move to not re-sign him and make whatever other moves there were. So I would agree with that. And I would say that whatever was lost was regained.
So let's play this scenario out a little bit more. So fixing the bullpen. Let's just say they sign, let's just say Edwin Diaz and trade for another eighth inning type guy in the bullpen. In the rotation, they go out and sign Carlos Rodon and they make a trade. Let's just say they trade a year of Devers because they can't reach an extension with them for a young, controllable, really good outfielder. Then you have a big hole at third base. I don't know what you do there. And you got to do something at shortstop. So you still have to, I don't know how this works. It doesn't make financial sense to me that, you could potentially not bring back Xander, know you're not going to extend Devers, and, still be able to fill all of the holes that you're creating. I feel like you have to do at least one of these things. You have to either bring back Xander or extend Devers. You don't have to do both, even though optimally I want you to do both, but I feel like there's no way to make this team really good next year without doing at least one of those things.
You don't think there's a chance that they don't extend Devers and just go into next season with him hanging in the balance?
And just let him walk? Get a year out of him? I cannot possibly see Chaim Bloom letting him go into his last year, because think about what you could get for a year of Rafael Devers. You could get, presumably a lot. I don't know. The Mookie thing is really screwing me up, because I'm not sure. Like, we saw what a year of Mookie got, right? And it wasn't a ton, but it was still like some.
It was also paired with salary dumping.
Right. Price. Like, you would assume that with the financials being what they are right now, especially Red Sox have very healthy books right now, that they'd be able to maximize value for Devers. And also, he's younger than Mookie was when they traded Mookie.
I was just going to bring that up, too.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, I don't think even a 5 or a 6 WAR season next year is worth just bringing him back and letting him walk. I think you either extend him or trade him. So it's hard for me to believe that they go into the year with him just as is.
Makes sense. But then, so what's your, I guess in that scenario, they could put Casas at third, keep Hosmer at first, find some remedy for DH. You said they've got some fantastic new outfielder that you just traded Devers for.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that hole. So I guess there's, and then they sign Trey Turner. There you go.
Just doesn't make sense. It's not cheaper. It's not cheaper to do all those things. No, I'm just going to say no.
It doesn't have to be cheaper. He just said team being better.
Yeah, no. I don't. Diego, I'm too emotional about this. So I don't think I can look at a way that this baseball team could potentially be better without at least one of Xander and Devers in the future.
Well, the good news is it's only going to get worse from here until something happens. So,
great.
Yeah.
Great. I'm here for it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I just want to give a big shout out to all of our listeners here who have stayed with us throughout the year. And, you know, if you're a longtime listener too, somebody who's been listening to Keaton and I for the last, I don't know, how many years have we been doing this? A long time. This is the 7th year of this show coming to a close. So I just really appreciate everybody out there who, you know, takes the time to download our episode every day and listen to us. And if you enjoy the show, you know, let us know. It's always great to get that feedback. You know, shoot us a message on Twitter. You can find Keaton at The Spoken Keats. You can find me at Tep Jake. You know, the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster, but we do appreciate you. And, you know, any rates and reviews that you guys can give us at the end of the season, let us know. And, obviously any feedback for things that you'd like for next year too, because we will be back and we will be, you know, bringing you updates in the off season as well. This podcast isn't going anywhere. It'll just get a little less frequent in the off season. And then we'll be fully fired up for 2023. So we've got a lot in store. We're already starting our planning process for that, but we couldn't do it without you listeners. So Keaton, thank you for everything that you do, editing the podcast and, you know, coming up with cool research and, you know, just being here with me every week.
Yeah, thanks for hosting. And I mean, echo everything you said about the listeners and keeping this going. This is really fun to do, so I appreciate you guys tuning in every week.
All right, well, that is the year, so thank you very much, and we will be with you again on our next episode, and we'll be looking towards 2023.